Here comes some small talk, a good way to begin. Like, how about this weather and this winter we're in? There's one cold feature that a majority hates. There's so much ice. Don't take off your skates. I would like to take this opportunity to send my sympathy to the cross-country skiers and snowmobilers of Wisconsin for their inability to enjoy what they love. Wow, what a winter. But we're here to talk about things we can control, like the people and places we can feature on this little thing called Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Good to be with you. Here's where we're going this week. Later on, you will meet Randy Bachman. He plays guitar, writes, and arranges music. In fact, he's written some of the biggest hits of the 60s and 70s as a member first of the Canadian sensation The Guess Who, then as the first thing you hear in the supergroup Bachman Turner Overdrive. He's on a big tour that takes us back and brings us up to date. The tour is stopping at Eau Claire's Pablo Center Saturday night. Jim Oliver and Deb Brown take us to Elderland, a place where both audiences and actors of a certain ilk love to dwell. Jim also paints a picture of what's happening where in community theater across West Wisconsin. We're also going to roll around in the music and story of the Blind Boys of Alabama, returning next week for a Pablo Center engagement. Our guest, Ricky McKinney, has been affiliated for over 40 years. And here's our point of initiation for a January Spectrum West. The Chippewa Valley Writers Guild, just a toddler by general standards, but making a name for itself, finding fulfillment down several different avenues. Educator and author B.J. Hollers got it started and continues to find new ways to engage members. He visited the studio on Monday. B.J. Hollers, fresh off his memorable appearance on the Big River Radio Wave holiday show, where he got rave reviews. Did you have fun?
I had a great time.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, each week, the repeat of Spectrum West, in case you didn't catch it on Thursdays, is at 7 p.m. on Fridays on stations of the News and Classical Music Network. B.J. Hollers and his cronies are going to own the 7 p.m. airwaves at least this week, because he'll be on a replay of what we're doing now. And after that, we will fight it out in civilized fashion. Now, you folks will notice that we here at WPR are comfortable promoting things on other radio outlets. We are secure in our place in the pecking order and believe good things happen when we share the spotlight. BJ, yes. What are you doing on some other radio station?
Well, my apologies. Happy to collaborate with WPR as well. But this time around, we're working with Converge Radio on a new radio drama series called Oddly Enough.
That's what we're going to talk about. But let's first, before we get on to that specific topic, talk more about the Chippewa Valley Writers Guild, because for those who patronize the concept as being just a nice place to hang out for writers who are bored and trying to find something to do, kind of like the pool hall for writers, au contraire, mon ami, it is becoming one of Wisconsin's foremost writers groups. This is true. A news release today from the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters that announced the new Wisconsin Poet Laureate, who is a lady from Milwaukee. I'm sure we'll expound on that somewhere down the line. That news release talks about the Poet Laureate Commission consists of member organization representatives, and the Chippewa Valley Writers Guild is one of eight organizations listed in that prestigious news release, among the Wisconsin Arts Board, the Wisconsin Humanities Council, and more. So you guys are now downtown, man.
We're there. We have arrived, and we're so happy to be a part of the commission.
How do you do that? Do you just barge through the door and say, here we are? Or well, is it part of a natural recognition evolution? How do you get recognized among all those heavyweights?
Right. Well, the barging is frowned upon, so we didn't do that. Okay. But what we did do was just continue to make great connections throughout the state. And I think we've been able to amass a bit of a following throughout our region. And we're invited to join. And we're so excited to welcome Margaret Rosgott to be the next Poet Laureate of our state.
Are you familiar with her work?
I am. In fact, we were on a panel together last fall, and we had a great time chatting and learning about each other's work.
Now, the news release said, call me Peggy, though. But not on her poetry. It's probably listed as Margaret. That's more lofty.
That is correct as well.
Okay. Which you should be then Benjamin something, shouldn't you?
You know, I've tried to go by that, and I realize I don't answer when people call me by that name, so yeah. I had to drop that one pretty quickly.
Were you BJ as a kid?
I looked at my birth certificate recently, and I was back home, and by the time that birth certificate was signed, apparently in the baby book, I was going by BJ. So by day two, I've been BJ.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
And it's cemented. All right, oddly enough, it's a radio show that's going to start, I guess, what, this Friday?
This Friday at 7 p.m.
Same time as the repeat.
Sorry, we should coordinate better.
That's okay. All right. So tell me about Oddly Enough. What is it?
Sure. Basically, it was the brainchild of a group of writers who got together and decided we should try to do something sort of in the same spirit as Bend in the River, which was a radio drama mm-hmm. we put together last year. This is kind of built upon the ideas and the tone of X-Files and The Twilight Zone and some of those fun mm-hmm. television shows that are spooky but a little bit fun and trying to kind of thread those needles in these standalone episodes.
The first season, what can we expect? Give us an hors d'oeuvre, a taste.
Absolutely. Well, we have 5 episodes in season 1. Many writers are represented. Jody Arnold, Jim and Jane Jeffries, Laura Buchholz, Ken Smansky, and myself. Each of us wrote our own episodes, everything from shag carpet that's taking over a home and a relationship to people who attend their 50th high school reunion, unearth a time capsule, and learn a secret that's been buried for some time, which was the one I worked on.
Yeah. Are you going to have sound effects and everything?
Things? You bet. Converge Radio really worked hard to highly produce these, and we have voice acting talent from across the region mm-hmm. helping us out as well.
I didn't get that call, but that's okay.
Well, you were more than welcome.
No,
I didn't want to
okay.
conflict with...
I'm way too busy.
You're very secure.
Yeah.
And,
you know. So was there... What kind of a charge were the writers given, or was any charge given? Spooky, weird, Rod Serling-ish, what?
All of those references were a part of that first conversation. I think we wanted to create the flexibility for writers to kind of really take it any direction they wanted to, but also to ensure that there was kind of a shared universe involved. And so a lot of these episodes have some kind of twist or turn on the world we think we know, okay. Whether it's the shag carpet taking over mm-hmm. or a 13-year-old who on his birthday has to make some big, tough decisions that will influence the rest of his life.
Okay. Season 1, how long does season 1 run?
It'll run for the next 5 Fridays, all at 7. We can share that spot with the repeat of Spectrum West, of course.
Sure.
And so that'll be season 1, and we're already gearing up toward a season 2 to be released hopefully next fall.
Oh, so it's a fall deal.
It is at the moment. We'll kind of see how hard we writers can write and get the producers and the voice actors what they need.
So you're thinking 1 season a year?
I think 1 season a year. I think we're going to try to up the number of episodes per season, and we've got some new writers we're working with now, too. So it's really an opportunity for local talent from the writing end, but also the voice acting end to come together to create something new on a regular basis.
99.9?
You got it.
On your radio dial. I used to do a lot of those promos years
That's
ago.
So.
As you can tell, the way I said that.
That's a free one.
Anything else the Writers Guild would like to promote while you're on our stage?
Well, I guess so. While I have you, if you're listening Thursday, that's tonight, we have our craft talk with Mike Paulus at the Pablo Center. So tickets are still available from the Pablo site. They're free.
Okay.
We think that'll be a great craft talk for anyone who's read Mike's work over the years. Also, we have on March 14th a really special event in partnership with the Wisconsin Academy of Arts, Sciences, and Letters, Poetry and Pie. $10 tickets at the Pablo Center website. It'll feature Dasha Kelly, a really renowned poet out of Milwaukee. And in addition to that, we've got some pies and some coffee, and we're going to have a wonderful afternoon.
Uh-huh.
And one final quick plug. This is our big venture forward, is our brand new summer retreats at the Priory this summer. Applications will open February 1st, and we have some amazing opportunities for writers throughout the country.
Are you able to let any cats out of the bag as to who special guests are going to be this summer?
I can now let those cats out of the bag. Poet Dasha Kelly, memoirist David McGlynn, novelist Nicholas Butler, and folk humorist Mary Mack. So really something for everyone, in addition to a keynote address from our very own Max Garland.
Wonderful. It's called Oddly Enough. BJ always comes through. It's always good to see you, and thanks for coming into the studio. And again, even though we're competitors, break a leg. And maybe even literally break a leg.
Oh, radio.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Here come a couple .orgs. CVWritersGuild.org, that's their website. ConvergeRadio.org, I don't know who that is. Randy Bachman visits Spectrum West a bit later, and Alice goes elsewhere, as Jim Oliver will relate, all on Spectrum West. The Blind Boys of Alabama have been around block after block. They've provided America with a living gospel songbook for 80 years. Wow.
Let my mother live till I get grown. Let my mother live till I get grown. Don't leave me in a godforsaken world all alone. Let my mother live till I get grown.
We spoke with original member Jimmy Carter back in 2015 when they came to raise a roof and spirits at a young Eau Claire festival. They're again making their way back north. In about a week, they'll occupy and probably own the stage of the RCU Theater at the Pablo Center. And this time, our guest is Ricky McKinney. His membership is pretty impressive, too. Thank you for taking time with us today here on WPR. I spoke with Jimmy Carter back in July of 2015, prior to your appearance in Eau Claire and the festival that bears its name. My questions for Jimmy revolved around his longevity in the group. You have longevity, but Jimmy puts belong in longevity. You've been affiliated with the Blind Boys how long?
I've been affiliated with the Blind Boys for 40 years, but I've been a member for 30 years.
You had an affiliation prior to that as what?
Well, I met Clarence when I was about 4 years old, but I had an opportunity to play with another group out of Texas. So I had an opportunity to play with the original Blind Boys back and forth.
Are you still drumming with the group, or have you given that up for time being?
Well, I never give it up, but what happened, one of the members passed away, Bishop Billy Bowers, so I had to come from the drums up front to help out with the singing. So I've been doing some singing for a while.
Okay. Now, you are well known for uttering the line, "I'm not blind, I just can't see." This is a big opportunity for the brand spankin' new Pablo Center in Eau Claire, because it's easy to be dazzled by its good looks, but I've always wondered if it has an aura other than appearance, and having you guys in the house will be huge on a lot of levels, but if anyone can feel a presence in place of seeing one, it's you guys. So I'm looking forward to hearing if the Pablo Center gives off the kind of power or sensation that I believe it can. Does that happen to you at times in a venue? Can you feel the venue?
Yeah, well, what it is that I've always said that I'm not blind, I just can't see. That means I might have lost my sight, but I never lost my direction. But, yeah, we sing from the heart, and what's from the heart reaches the heart. So when people can enjoy what we're doing, we can feel what's going on.
Yeah, this place, though, is so new and so beautiful. I hope that it does give off something that makes you guys appreciate it. You have a recording studio in Atlanta, which is your hometown, and you're sitting there now as we speak with you. What kinds of things go on at your studio? Do you experiment on your own? Who do you record?
Well, we've had a lot of people to come in and record. We did something with Bobby Brown. He came in and did some post-recording there. And Angie Stone, she did some recording there. And also the Blind Boys, we have recorded some things there. Clarence Fountain, when they had Clarence Fountain and the boys, when they had the group with Clarence and Sam Butler, they recorded part of that album in the studio. So we have a lot of different people here in the studio.
So you go down there and play around every once in a while as well?
Yeah, it's set up where we have on one side, it's analog, and on the other side, we have Pro Tools. So I run the analog side, and I have an engineer that runs the Pro Tools side.
I love working with recording tape. I shouldn't say loved, because now the digital's here. But analog, still, a lot of people still like the sound.
Well, the richness of it, you can't get around from that. You know, actually, Pro Tools was designed just to be an editing suite. But they took it and made it into a recording device. But you just can't, some things, sound that you get off tape can't be replaced.
Yeah. I want to get back into the perception that you have. I should point out that you guys like to come to Wisconsin in extreme seasons, because maybe the first time was in winter. You did some recording sessions, and then you came in summer for the Eau Claire Festival. And now you're back in January. Now, when you arrive and you meet people and prepare for the show, tell me what's going on in your head, because, you know, without sight, what is your imagination doing at those times? Do you imagine faces? Do you imagine audiences? And again, we can go back to the venue. Do you imagine venues you're in?
Actually, I don't. I don't imagine faces. I don't imagine. What I like is just the aura of the people when they come out and they enjoy. And you can, because we don't like to sing to a conservative crowd. So when the people enjoy what they're doing, you can feel where they're coming from.
No kidding. So have you been without sight your whole life?
I lost my sight in 1975 from glaucoma.
Okay. You have some relativity to what things look like, obviously.
Exactly. I was 23 years old.
Okay. Now, you like to say, and you've already said it earlier in the conversation, what comes from the heart reaches the heart. Is that what you hear from people, that you're reaching them? Because, you know, music with heart is something I think we can agree that we need more of today. So are people telling you that you're getting through?
People come to the record table and say they feel something they never felt before. A lot of people say that they have been through different experiences and they had them to play Blind Boys records while they were going through it. One guy had a heart operation. He wanted to play the Blind Boys music, and they played our CD while they were working on him. And I guess that helped him to realize what was going on. A lot of people come to the record table and they said that they might not believe, but they felt something that they never felt before. And a lot of people say we make them want to go back to church again. So it's a lot going on.
You guys do a great version of People Get Ready, of course, written by Curtis Mayfield. It was on your Grammy-winning album, Higher Ground. In fact, you won Best Traditional Gospel Album Grammys in 2002, 3, 4, 5, and in 2009, as well as a Lifetime Achievement Trophy in 2009, and you were nominated again in 2017.
Well, you know, it's good to be appreciated. It's good to be appreciated. When we won the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Grammy Association, that was a very special award, because a lot of people, they win awards, but a lot of times they have already passed away. Mm-hmm. But to be a black blind quartet means a whole lot. Let us know that if people can, we love the people and the people seem to love us.
That's true. Ricky McKinney with us on the telephone from his home down in Atlanta, near Atlanta. The Blind Boys of Alabama. Ricky is a member, and they are appearing Friday, January 25th in Wisconsin at the beautiful new Pablo Center at the Confluence. That's in Eau Claire. Ricky, what's the state of gospel music today? Because, and the reason I ask that is it's sometimes associated with past generations and those getting up there in age. Are there young artists grabbing the baton from the older guys and running with it today?
There are a lot of young artists that are singing quartet gospel, and we're glad about it. You know, it gets more and more difficult to be heard nowadays. A lot of the community stations are being bought out by commercial stations, but then it's still there. Gospel music is still alive and well, thank God.
Do you have some names of some people we should listen to who are up-and-comers?
Well, Daryl McFadden, he's one guy. Keith Wonderboy is another one, and just so many. Melvin Williams, just to name a few. Okay. Those are some people that are doing great things.
We'll look them up. You have a website, the RickyMcKinneyExperience.com. What's someone going to find if they go there?
Well, you're going to learn about Ricky McKinney, if you go to Wikipedia, you know, they bless me to have my own Wikipedia page called Eric Ricky McKinney. But if you go over there, you're going to see things about quality sound management. You're going to see where I come from. You'll hear a lot of good music, and it's just a good experience.
How often do you guys perform? You guys still travel pretty widely, don't you?
Right, we're on the road about 150 days out of the year, on a good year. And so, thank God, people still love the Blind Boys.
And who are the members, the singing members of the Blind Boys of Alabama? And then to give a shout-out to your instrumentalists that appear with you.
The Blind Boys consist of Jimmy Carter, who's our original member, Ben Moore, Paul Beasley, and myself. I'm Ricky McKinney. Those are the blind members of the Blind Boys. Our music director, Joey Williams, he's a sighted member, but he is a member of the Blind Boys. And we're accompanied by Austin Moore on drums, Ray Latson, he's played bass guitar, and also Richard Gibbs, he plays the organ.
Ricky McKinney, thanks for being with us on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're looking forward to hearing you and seeing you in Wisconsin. Safe travels.
All right, I'm going to tell everybody, don't miss it when the boys are back in town.
I like that.
God bless you. Thank you.
You too. Here's something ironic. It's called I Can See a Little Bit of It.
I can see. Can't you see? God's been good to me. He opened doors blind eyes can see. Sometimes I had to cry.
Blind Boys of Alabama, next Friday night, January 25th, Pablo Center, Eau Claire. Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. A few productions going on in West Wisconsin and some auditions as well. To get specific, here's Mr. Jim Oliver.
The Eau Claire Children's Theater will present the dinner theater production of Murder at the Prom Friday and Saturday, and the following Friday and Saturday at the Oxford Theater. Terms of Endearment will be staged by the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild through Sunday in the Grand Theater. The Falls Players will present The Hobbit January 25th to the 27th in the Lunda Theater in Black River Falls. The comedy 84 Charing Cross Road will be performed Saturdays and Sundays through February 3rd at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. Auditions for the Charitable Sisterhood for the Second Trinity Victory Church will be held from 7 to 9 p.m. on Monday and Tuesday at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. The Clear Lake Community Theater will hold auditions for The Music Man at 7 p.m. Monday, January 21st in the Clear Lake Area Community Center. And the Wide Spot Players have scheduled auditions for Dearly Departed from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Monday and Tuesday, January 28th and 29th, in the Wide Spot Performing Arts Center in Stockholm. I'm Jim Oliver.
Did he say Wide Spot? Here's a Spectrum memo. Sax player Mike Walk and friends are putting on a very special one-time performance Saturday at the Wide Spot. It's called the Somewhere Between Project and features Walk, Faith Allwelling on vocals, Tommy Bentz on guitar, Jeff Walk on trumpet, Chris Bates on bass, Rich McDonald on drums, and Josh Gallagher on keys. Widespot.org is that website just for you. You know, since he's already comfortable, let's take advantage and take you to a land that's far away for some and right now for others with a special guest. Again, here's Jim Oliver.
Thanks, Al. Aging positively and gracefully is the message of the play Alice in Elderland, an original production of ECWIT, a troupe that presents dramatic readings of literature, plays, and poetry. The play will run on Saturday evening and Sunday afternoon at the Heide Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. In the studio to talk about Alice in Elderland is the playwright, director. And are you one of the actors? I can't remember.
I am.
You
yes.
are, yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. Well, Debbie Brown, welcome to Spectrum West.
Well, thank you.
So tell us about this all-women theater group.
Well, actually, we're coming up on our third anniversary. We got together in January of 2016 after a little bit of frustration for not being able to get parts for women of a certain age. So we thought, well, you know, instead of complaining about it, let's just do something about it. So we formed our own group where we can play any role we choose. So we play women, we play young kids, we play men. We use a lot of creative casting. We found it so fulfilling that we've just expanded into performing for a lot of different groups, and it's been great.
We were talking earlier about the fact that there are more parts for women in general. Some playwrights are writing plays for women now, which really wasn't happening before. Have you noticed a trend there, or is it my imagination?
No, I think there is a trend for that. There's also a trend for more creative casting in professional theater companies as well, and I'm hoping that will trickle down a little bit to the community theater. One of the issues is, and as a male actor, you maybe have experienced this, roles that come up for men, your age range is a little bit more flexible than for women, so that men can have the lead romantic role across decades, mm-hmm. whereas women are limited. When you get beyond 60, you're not going to play the romantic lead, generally speaking. You're going to be the grandma. You're going to be the silly old lady. There's just not that many roles that are challenging for an actress to do. And which doesn't mean that there aren't roles there that are fun to do and that are fulfilling to do. I was lucky enough to be in Doubt a couple years ago, which, you know, was a great role. Mm-hmm. But again, there were a lot of women that auditioned for that role that were wonderful and would have been great in the part, and now there was nothing for them. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the reasons we formed the company and call it Equit, so that, you know, take off on equitable or equity of performance and availability for women and women of a certain age.
Mm-hmm. I hate to say how many years ago this was, but I was like 35 years old, and I auditioned for the part of Grandpa in You Can't Take It With You. I got the part.
Oh.
But it took an hour for makeup. In order to do it. My mother was still living, and she went to the show, and she didn't recognize me.
Oh, really? Oh, that's
so
fun.
So I was wondering about younger women. Can you know, do makeup to give them the, you know, the age that perhaps
yes.
might be necessary?
Yes, yes. And I'm sure that's true, and much easier than having someone of my age made up to look like someone in their 20s. Mm. That probably is possible, but that would be challenging.
That would be a challenge, yes. I'm looking at my personal situation. Somebody told me the other day, my, you've gotten gray. So that would have to be fixed somehow or other. Well, Alice in Elderland, is this your first original show that you're doing, or have you done mostly stuff that's available?
As far as Equit goes, most of what we do has been adaptations of literature, short stories, excerpts from novels, poetry, and we have done straight plays as well. This one was written as a play, not as a short story, and I have another short play that we're actually doing at the Heidi as well, called Me, Myself, and I, another comedy. And then I did write a little holiday play that we did in November. I have done some writing of more memoir, essay, short story type things, and we haven't done any adaptations of those. It is fun to be involved in a group that I can say, hey, I've got this thing. Let's try it.
and they're willing.
And they're willing.
Yeah, that's even better. She is Debbie Brown, who is the playwright, director, and one of the actors in the production, Alice in Elderland. When did you start working on this particular production?
Equit was approached by Chippewa Valley Learning and Retirement to do a performance. And I suggested, you know, I've got this idea in the back of my head for this play. You know, is it okay if I work on this original thing? And they said, sure, you know, whatever you want to do. And it had taken me about a year thinking about it, of working on it, of talking to other people, of working with Equit ladies, you know, doing table reads. Does this work? Does that work? Any suggestions? Then in April, we presented it, and it went over so well that we did it again and again and again. It's a delightful show to do because there's so many parts for us. There's over a dozen different characters that everyone gets to play. I'm Alice, so I just get to be Alice. But the other people take on the White Rabbit and Tweedledum and Tweedledee and Humpty Dumpty and all the other roles. So it's really fun to do.
I get from the names of the characters you just mentioned that this perhaps isn't necessarily related totally to Alice in Wonderland.
It is a takeoff on Alice in Wonderland. There's some Alice Through the Looking Glass characters as well.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. So I combined my favorite characters from both. Okay. With the twist that they're all talking about what happens as you age.
So who are the members of the cast?
We have Sue Fulkerson, Ann Pearson, Beverly Olson, Sarah Bryan, and Kathleen Sullivan. There's six of us. Anne is our newest member, and the play originally was written for five, which is what we had at the time. So we worked Anne into this production, so she gets to be on stage with us, too.
So you're growing, so to speak.
We are growing. We kind of like the size that we are right now, and because we're such a democratic organization, we all decide on everything. We're very cooperative, and any more than six would be, you know, a little bit challenging.
I was asked about what's the set. Do you have a traveling set, or do you have a complicated set, or do you let them do lights and sound?
We don't. That's one of the benefits of our particular group, is that we can go anywhere and do a performance of anything, because we have our scripts. We are a dramatic reading group, and we bring stools and a music stand, and that's pretty much it. For Alice, because there's so many different characters, we do use hats. That the characters are differentiated, and it adds a little bit, but that's it. And we prefer to keep it that way, so that you know, we can be in libraries, we can, you know, be in somebody's house, we can be on stage, we can do it anywhere.
Yeah. You have hats, but you don't have other elaborate costuming.
Not at all.
Are there more plays in sight? What's coming up?
What's coming up is in March, Valdemar Auger has a birthday, and the Auger organization approached us to do a reading of some of his work. I don't know if you're familiar with Auger. He's a Eau Claire Norwegian writer. He ran the Reform newspaper for years and years, and he's a prolific author. And so what we're doing now is adaptations of parts of some of his novels. So we'll be performing that in March. In April, we're doing some poetry for the Wisconsin Fellowship of Poetry annual meeting, which is going to be in Eau Claire. And then in May, we're part of the Sound and Stories event that's going to be at the Pablo for Mother's Day, celebrating Mother's Day. And so we're working on a piece for that as well. We have stuff in the works.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, do you do all the writing, or do some of the other?
No. We share the writing. And what's really nice about that, our most recent adaptations were for the book festival. So we read every author that was coming to the book festival, decided which ones would work for us, and then we spread the wealth there. We each did adaptations, we took turns directing, and it doesn't place the burden on just one person to come up with this. And also, everyone is talented in their own special way, and so they get to shine. And we learn so much from other people's opinions and their approach to different literature.
Well, we've been talking with Debbie Brown, who is a playwright, director, and actor in the production Alice in Elderland. The show will play at 7:30 p.m. Saturday and 2 p.m. Sunday in the Heide Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. For ticket information, you can use your favorite internet search engine to search for the Heide Center and see what is available for you. Debbie, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me. This was great.
You're listening to Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you so much for doing so. Support for WPR comes from Marquardt Toyota, dedicated to providing an enjoyable and stress-free buying process with welcoming facilities located off Highway 53 between Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls, or at MarquardtToyota.com. Here's a Spectrum memo for you. The Jazz Age by the Phipps Dance Theater features performances this weekend, including Sunday afternoon. Receptions for new exhibits in the Phipps Galleries are this Friday from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Those exhibits open through February 24th, featuring acrylic painting by Kurt Devine, found and hand-stitched fabric work by Lindsay Reiner, photography and fiber art by Stephanie Lynn Rogers, ceramic and found object sculpture by Lynn Wadsworth, and a cut paper installation by Adam White. The website there is thephipps.org. And the Art Z Gallery in Amory's January exhibit is the annual Wild and Wonderful Show, featuring jewelry, mixed media painting, oils, pastels, pottery, wood marquetry, antler craft. Wow. And watercolor, as well as the exhibit Structures by clay sculptor John Kamrath. ArtZGallery.org is that particular website. A child of the 60s, I was a fan of the Guess Who. And then when the 70s arrived, Bachman-Turner Overdrive was a good disco antidote. Randy Bachman played guitar in both groups. He plays today not as a reenactor, but as a man continuing to find new ways for he and his instrument to express themselves. He's at Eau Claire's Pablo Center this Saturday night.
Little darling, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter. Little darling, it feels like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun, doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun, and I said, it's all right.
That's a piece from his latest album called By George, by Randy, featuring music of George Harrison, of course, Randy Bachman. We reached him at his home in Canada. I was impressed with your PR team yesterday. I was having lunch in a Red Robin, and my server came up and I said, hang on. Their PA system was blasting, taking care of business.
Cool.
Yeah. You know, I'm doing an interview, and Randy's team's providing a preview. Hey, I noticed the OC and the OM after your name. Order of Canada. That's pretty cool. Congratulations are in order, I guess.
Thank you. Yeah, it was Order of Manitoba, which is our province, and then, I don't know, I've got a couple. I can't keep track of them. They're on my wall.
Do you wear something? Do you get, what do you get? Something?
You're supposed to wear a pin, but, you know, where are you going to wear a pin with a, I don't know what it is, it looks like an Edelweiss, you know, that white flower from Austria, from The Sound of Music. I don't know what it is. I don't know. I don't wear any of that stuff.
In the 50 odd years since you guys cranked out significant hits, beginning with the Guess Who, is it possible to condense the evolution of Randy Bachman? Tell us about some of the roads you've been on.
Well, it's condensed into a two-hour show, and that's the show I'm doing on the road, which starts with a couple of songs from my new album, By George. So it starts out with Between Two Mountains and a couple of George Harrison songs that are revisited. And then I start saying, well, you all know George is from Liverpool. I'm from the Liverpool of Canada, which was called Winnipeg. Ah. And Liverpool, you know, kicked out Jerry and the Pacemakers and Badfinger and the Beatles and all these other things. And Winnipeg kicked out Neil Young, Burton Cummings, Randy Bachman, and Fred Turner. And I'm still playing with these guys today. The four of us are still rocking in the free world in different forms and bands. And we get together every once in a while. And here's my story. And I start with Shaking All Over and take you through how I wrote These Eyes and Laughing and Undone and American Woman and No Time. And then all through the BTO, Let It Ride, Taking Care of Business, Rolling Down the Highway, all those songs, how they were written. Yeah. And then we play them at the end of the story. So it's like a musical journey that's kind of narrated in a way. And that's my life in a timeline and everybody else's, because they, the same timeline, they heard the songs and went through their own experiences when they were hearing the songs.
Okay. I was going to ask you eventually about Winnipeg, other than it being flat up there. Is it a good music town? But obviously it was.
It was, because it was the top of the Great Plains. Then, you know, AM radio was king. And so AM radio at night, some of the stations that we would listen to, WLS in Chicago and WNOE in New Orleans, where they were 50,000 watts. And there's something about the Great Plains, and I don't know, the clouds where the radio waves bounced off the other planets or something, that late at night we would get these incredible radio stations that you never heard the music in Winnipeg. You heard it from Chicago or New Orleans or St. Louis or something like that. Even on a really weird night, we get Wolfman Jack from Mexico. I would go call Neil Young up or see him and say, go to this little notch on your radio station, you hear incredible music. And he would, you know, do the same thing with me. We listened to these little rocket radios that didn't even have a speaker. You put a little earphone in your ear and you attach this little rocket ship to your bed. It didn't even have volume control, but you pull the nose out of it, and somehow it was a oscillator that got you frequencies, and you heard these radio stations. So we grew up listening to this incredible music that no one else in Winnipeg could hear.
You know, and I didn't realize it. There was kind of a Canadian invasion. You mentioned Neil Young, of course, Gordon Lightfoot. Rush was around, Joni Mitchell. Lighthouse, I got to know Skip Prokop pretty well. I was sad to see that he passed away last year. Didn't know that. And I am proud, by the way, I'm not sure if you're aware of all this, but I'm proud to have an album by King Biscuit Boy. I do have one in a peach crate somewhere. There you go. Here's the thing about what you do nowadays. I was looking at your discography and things you've done and things you're doing. I want to get back to that By George album in a bit, but I'm very interested in the jazz thing albums. What about wandering into jazz as a musician, or did you have early roots there?
Growing up, I heard a lot of stuff in Winnipeg. I had an aunt who took me to every show, and she took me to country western shows and the early rock shows that came to Winnipeg, and a lot of them were like jazz artists. And so I'd go see them, and I was very influenced by that. And then I had a friend of mine knew a bunch of jazz scores, so he taught them to me. And then I wrote She's Come Undone, which is a pretty jazzy song, considering when it came out and what was on the hit parade at the time.
Yeah.
And then BTO had Blue Collar and Looking Out for Number One. And so I got to indulge in that jazz stuff. And all the fans keep saying, why don't you do a whole album of jazz stuff? And so in between projects, I had nothing to do and nothing really much to say in the rock and roll genre at that time. I had said it all, and I thought, well, I'm going to go back and write some jazz songs. I always challenged myself as a songwriter. I'm going to write this kind of song. I'm going to write that kind of song. So I went and studied a bunch of jazz standards. A lot of them are just one verse, one stanza.
Uh-huh.
And so I did a couple of old ones like that just to get me rolling. And I like Chet Baker and the way he sang and Mose Allison and guys like that. And so I thought I'm just going to take a shot at doing this album. So I did the album, and then I did two jazz things album. One was with the New Guitar Summit, which is all teachers from Berklee College in Boston who are really great guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And one was with jazz musicians in Vancouver, and it ended up being just a fun project for me. And then I got to headline the Montreal Jazz Festival and the Toronto Jazz Festival on my own and played gigs with George Benson and Kurt Elling and guys like that. And so for me, it was a fun excursion. I hope to do another one soon.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of musicians who say the jazz really, it serves to expand them as musicians.
Yeah, it does, because when I first did my first gig with the guys, the jazz band, and we did the next night, and I went to them later and I said, did you forget what we did last night? They said, what do you mean? I said, you didn't play the same solo. They said, we never play the same solo.
Yeah,
why do you always play the same solo? I said, well, I play classic rock. People want it to sound just like the record. They said, well, this is your chance to do something new. Uh-huh. So if you need to start with what you did on the record, do that, and then take another double or triple solo, and then do something out of the blue, out of your head, out of your heart. And it doesn't matter what it is, just do it. And it's terrifying and frightening to do it in front of a bunch of people. And then you get this feeling of, well, I can jump off the stage and they'll support me. You know, that kind of thing, like mosh, it's like musical mosh. I can do anything and they'll like it. And they don't even mind if you make a mistake, because they always say in jazz, there's no bad notes. It's just a blue note.
Yeah.
Hit it again, and then it's intentional. Everybody thinks it's cool. So I enjoyed those excursions.
The jazz groove, it's legendary.
Yeah.
Hey, I think I saw in the newspaper that Burton Cummings had a birthday recently. You guys were a version of Lennon and McCartney there for a while. Did you get it on early together in Winnipeg?
Well, when he joined the band, we wanted to write our own songs. I was the main writer, but I thought, you know, I've got to write with him because he's a singer. So if you're writing the words with him, you're crafting, you're deciding what goes in, and also in his vocal range, then you've got it in. So we started to write together, and we copied pretty much Lennon and McCartney, Jagger and Richard, Brian Wilson and Mike Love, and Bacharach and Hal David. So we did, you know, these eyes are kind of like a Burt Bacharach song in a way, you know, the chords and the jazz chords. And same with Brian Wilson, a lot of great jazz chords. And then our other pop stuff was pretty Beatley and pretty Rolling Stonesy.
You mentioned the album By George, By Randy. You're going to be playing your arrangements from it in your upcoming shows, including the one in Eau Claire. I want to tell people we're talking with Randy Bachman, Guess Who, Bachman Turner Overdrive, and worldwide performer up to this day, and he's going to hit the Pablo Center for the first time, and I dare say that he's going to be impressed. Tell me what arranging someone else's popular music is like, because Harrison's was downright popular. Are there things that you're careful about? Is there any preservation or conservation or safeguarding you have in mind? Do you feel kind of responsible in a way, like you're handling your mom's or your grandmother's fine china?
I felt a difficult wall at first to try to change a Beatles song, which is kind of biblical, like it's etched in stone, like the Ten Commandments, in everybody's mind and heart and soul. And then I look back at how Junior Walker did These Eyes and Lenny Kravitz did American Woman. Kurt Elling, the great jazz singer from Chicago, did She's Come Undone. Even Kelly Clarkson did American Woman lately. And as a songwriter to a songwriter, I thought I would just take George's songs as songs and never mind the Beatle arrangement. Take it as if the Beatles was a demo, and I was going to do it my own way.
Okay.
And so I did everything my own way, and most of them turned out really well, and a lot of Beatle fans love it. Some of them hate it, but that's when you do something that's a little extreme or something new, you always get lovers and haters.
They're very cool. I'm privileged to have it, and I'm going to be playing some samples. One more thing. Tell me about Guitarchives. I think that's pretty cool.
Well, it's just a label I started for just guitar music for my early guitar mentor or teacher.
I see that you continue to hang out with the guys. You are appearing March 2nd with Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yeah, we're doing Lynyrd Skynyrd's final tour of Canada.
Yeah.
I'm opening for them. And then we just got asked to do some U.S. dates, which are probably going to be with them and Van Halen and Bad Company and other bands like that.
Okay.
Everyone's jumping on the Skynyrd bus, and so am I, and it's a lot of fun. I toured with them way back with the original Lynyrd Skynyrd in the early 70s when everybody thought BTO was a southern band because we played down south. In, you know, Atlanta and St. Louis and Dallas and things like that with ZZ Top and the Doobie Brothers and Charlie Daniels when he was a rocker,
yeah.
Allman Brothers, and we were all on the same shows together.
I have to say, back in the 70s when I was a PD at a radio station, I was proud as heck when I got a BTO paperweight from the record company.
Oh, those are rare. Those are big money on eBay now.
Are they? Why did you tell me that, man? I can't find the dang thing.
Well, go find it.
I'm going to do
it. Send it to me. I don't even have one.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
When you have those things, you give them all away, and then you end up with nothing.
I know. Why
We also had BTO belt buckles, which were incredible.
Oh, wow.
Like a great big gear with BTO in the middle.
You got one of those?
No, they're all gone.
Okay. Randy Bachman, thanks.
My pleasure.
Something in the way she moves. Something in the way she smiles. Something in me, where I love go, I don't know.
Yes, that man can play guitar. Randy Bachman. Saturday night, 8 p.m., Pablo Center at the Confluence. That's in downtown Eau Claire. Tickets, PabloCenter.org. Shoot out some Spectra memos for you. The 6th Annual Film Series is up and running at the Shell Lake Arts Center. Next dates are February 12th and March 23rd. Info online at shelllakeartcenter.org. The Ellie Phillips Library in Eau Claire features Southwestward Ho. It's an art photography exhibit by Stephen Johnson through January 28th. ecpubliclibrary.info is that website. An art exhibit by Stephen Johnson. I just said that, didn't I? Ellie Phillips, yeah, January 28th. Wow. Well, guess what? Next week, we're going to look ahead to the Friends and Family Concert by the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra. We will talk about a unique act returning to the Mabel Tainter. They told me this is their third time being there. And since eating bugs is all the buzz, we're going to chirp about that, too. We're talking to a young UW Stout student who did a very interesting research project. That hits kind of home for me. Thanks for the promotion, Kate, Supervision Dean, and thank you guys out there. Your presence in our audience is very much appreciated. Please keep in touch with anything or anyone you'd like to hear us talk about or with. Our email address is spectrumwest@wpr.org. I guess we're on Facebook, too. I think so, sure. For Jim Oliver, I'm Al Ross. Thanks again. See you next week.